Gimel, we started yesterday with Psukim, Nakdama. We learned basically two Psukim. Mizmal Dov B'Yosef B'Midbar Yehuda. He's ready with Mishal. Good morning, Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer here is online. Then we learned Pasuk Beis. Okay, let's settle down. Okay, Mr. Rosenbaum, welcome.
Thank you. As much as I can be here.
Okay, so we learned yesterday, Yehuda, we learned yesterday the Hagama, that this Mizmor, everyone says, come out the city. David is running for his life. He's hiding from Shaul, and he presents his very passionate desire to connect to Hashem. We learned Pasuk Beis, yesterday, Lekim, Keli, Ata. That's a powerful word. You are my God. That's a powerful expression. Number two, we learned Ashachareko. I yearn. Doresh. We said yesterday the Medrash Shoicher Toiv. The Medrash on Tehillim. What does it mean? Shoicher means the yearning, a desire, a good desire, a good yearning, and that's how it's used here according to most Mefarshim. David says Ashachareko.
I think it means to dig, in other words, to seek.
To seek, right? To seek. I seek you out, Hashem. And then we learn one of the Farshim says it means I wake up early in the morning, early to bed, early to rise, will make you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Right? Everyone knows that? Early to bed, early to rise. Okay, early to bed, early to rise. We live in a world today, a whole different world, fine. Now, Ashachareka. Then we come over here. Then we come to the third expression. Okay, that's expression number three. I have a thirst. A thirst. Expression number four. Koma. Mapike. What does that word mean? Almost every one of the page says, I don't know. Ein lechover. There's no dugma. There's no dimyon. There's no doma. Ein lo dimyon.
This is
in Pasuk Beis, page 542. Chazora from yesterday. Koma. Koma, and from the context, it means a yearning. Some the Malbum was very passionate to say it means kimo. It means I, my nafshi, komalucha visori. My neshama wants to be like my bossa, just like a person's bossa, his guf, has a yearning for pleasure, for food, for drink, for satisfaction. So too, the neshama has a yearning. It's kamo. There is a parallel. Okay, and that's a very powerful concept. The Malbim says is really very, very, very profound, because we all know that part of coming into this world, it's able to do to the neshama what the neshama cannot possibly do in the olam haneshamas. When a neshama is into a guf, the guf can be forced the neshama to go to places where no man has gone before. When you take the neshama and you wrap it up in the body, the neshama is forced to enter into situations that affect the neshama and change the neshama's, has an effect. The neshama is very sensitive, it's very vulnerable, and it's molded, shaped by its experience. So a neshama by itself floats. It doesn't have the ability. There's magnetic fields in Ruchnias, and a neshama automatically, without any control, it just naturally it drifts. It is pulled to where it belongs. So, but let's say you don't want the neshama to go. You want to take the neshama. You want to take it away. You want it. You want to bring it somewhere else. So it should be conditioned. It should be altered. It should be affected. So then you have to go and put the neshama in a davar gashmi. Oh, gashmi. So you can take a gashmi. You can take an object. You can take it wherever you want. And when you take it, somewhere else into this world, it has an effect on the neshama. So over here, that's really what the Malbim says: is koma lucha v'sodi. My neshama nafshi is koma lucha, koma. L'chavisari. It's a hard translation, but he's saying it's like kimo, that my neshama is like my bossa. The bossa is gashmius, by the neshama, the analogy is the neshama is going to have the same yearnings, and on a deeper level, that's why the neshama enters into the basar, so that the neshama can somehow learn something good from the basar. The basar, the same way the basar has a yearning, taiva, to have pleasure, to enjoy. So too, by putting the neshama in the basar, it elevates the neshama on its level. The neshama will draw from the basar its the mindless, not the chesroinus.
By the way, the nikud here is like a show, like a verb.
A verb.
Binyan kal, kamatz batach, and the hay is from the show.
Her.
From the show.
From the shoresh. Koma.
The third letter. That's why there is a mafik there to emphasize it. This is one of the three letters of the shoresh.
Koma. Okay. So it's a three-letter shoresh word meaning what?
Oh, that's eloch
haver. Oh, you're not going there.
Eloch haver.
Okay, so whatever this is, okay, Kamal Chavisari.
I was thinking,
it's like Kamo.
I want to take
no, it's not.
I was taking a wild. I want to take a wild guess. You say, Anachnu Mo.
Okay.
Right, Mo meaning nothing.
Nothing.
And I, my soul is Kamo.
It's nothing to you. It's an expression of humility. Anachnu Mo.
That's a wild guess.
Okay, interesting. All right, it's really hard to translate. We tried yesterday. Everyone says Ein Lechaver, and it has an expression Nafshi. I guess the words go now. How do we even put the words together? Nafshi koma lechavisari. Look at Rashi again. We did this yesterday. Look at Rashi one more time.
On page 542.
So Rashi puts the words Nafshi with the word Sama. 542 Samach Gimel Pasuk Beis. Rashi puts with nafshi, tzoma l'cho nafshi, period. And then it says, koma l'cho visari. Rashi again, so koma l'cho visari, l'shoen ta'ava, my basar as a yearning for you. Okay, as a yearning, v'ein loy dimyoy. My neshama is thirsty, and my basar yearns for you, Hashem. Okay, we'll leave it with that. Okay, we read through all the Mefarshim yesterday, all the Mahalcha, but we'll leave with that for now. Okay, now let's go further. Where in the Eretz Tzia V'Oyev Bili Mayim, the desert. Over here we're dealing with the Midbar Yehuda. The Midbar is a place of thirst. It is a land V'Oyev. Everyone learned over here that the land is tired. And Bili Mayim, and there is no water. Okay, the desert is the desert. Okay, the desert is a not a pleasant place to be. We don't appreciate that. We think, like the average person, you take the desert, you think about the Catskill Mountains going up on a country road. That's not the desert. The desert is Saudi Arabia, sand, storms. Okay, it's...
But, it's... You know, when Bnei Israel were in the Midbar, it doesn't necessarily mean a sandy desert. It also means a wilderness.
Okay, so that's
uninhabited.
So you're touching upon a big, big topic. Where exactly is the Midbar that the Jewish people traveled for 40 years? Where is Har Sinai? It would be good to know as a starting point Har Sinai, because that's where we started from. Where is Har Sinai? So there's a big debate among all the experts in this field to attempt to identify. If you're going to say it's the Sinai, it's Sinai, the Lord toward Egypt, that's a very different type of desert than the desert of Saudi Arabia. It's a whole different ballgame. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different ballgame. You can probably, I would imagine, if you're in this Sinai, right along the boundary of Egypt, you're out over there, I would imagine... Okay, maybe we can survive, maybe. But if you're telling that the desert is in Saudi Arabia, which it seems a lot of research, there's a lot of discussion, that's a whole different type of desert.
Is it because it's larger?
It's much more dangerous, much hotter, much more dangerous, it's endless, and the sandstorms make a world of a difference compared to Egypt, where I don't think they have these type of things. not that I know that, I'm an expert on this, but just reading a little bit, there is a book, I want to get around to reading one day, I never read it, is Alexander Huhl, my favorite person. He wrote a whole book on this to identify where is Har Sinai. And he presents Huhl, H-O-O-L. You can get that book. The book is a Feldheim book. It costs $30 in Eichler's. And you can get it now on Amazon in brand new condition for $3. $3. I asked someone, how in the world is it possible? It must be Gezel. So he said, no, it's brand new.
He didn't like it. He didn't want to read it. He got
two
of them.
Bruno, there's a whole, you buy many of them. You buy a whole bunch of them. How in the world is it possible that it can be on Amazon for $3 when in Eichler's it cost $30?
Yeah, but it wasn't a run on this. What's the name of the price
goes up. I don't remember the name of the book.
It's
on demand. No, they don't. No, not, no. This is not on demand. No, no, no. This is Feldheim.
I used to buy Taste's Choice from Amazon, it's a subscription, and they had a very good price on it. Then suddenly, they had a better price. It was coming from India, the exact same bottle with a different label, with a O with a Star K on it. It came Erev Pesach. I called up Star K. They asked him if it was Kosher Pesach. They said that he never gave it a hechsher at all.
Fraud.
So I said, it says, what do you do about it? He said, where's it from? I said, it's Indians. He said, oh, the Indian know what the Chinese.
They got off him.
So I called Amazon.
I don't care.
Amazon gave me back the full price for the whole shipment, so I get the free coffee.
Yeah.
So I can't have a timer. Otherwise, I can go and sue Amazon, right?
I don't know what's going on.
I can't go to find Amazon because they say we have no business.
I asked Binyamin Levitz. Rabbi Levitz's son. He's
right. But they're still selling it.
He said he doesn't understand how it works. It's a very complex algorithm. Sometimes they have to get rid of things. I don't understand. I thought it's Gezel. There must be some hanky panky going on. How can this possibly be? I really don't know. I don't know what's going on. Any event, he wrote a very. I didn't read the book, so I can't tell you anything about it. The only reason why I'm so interested in this topic is because of Meir Appeldorf, who gave me The Gold of Exodus by Howard Bloom, and I read that book, and that is an amazing, amazing, amazing book, which sheds light on so many different things that go on in this world, how government really works, how intelligence agencies work, and how people are crazy, and how... And an approach to understand where is Har Sinai. In Har Sinai, where is Har Sinai? And there's one thing I take out of that book. It's every time I come to the words, Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar Be'eretz Lezerua, it's a whole new meaning. When you read how he describes what it's like to travel for a couple of days in the Saudi Arabia desert. You just try to go there on a tour, try to go travel there for a couple of days, you can't even survive for 5 minutes. And how could Klal Yisrael survive there for 40 years is a miracle beyond a miracle.
They weren't in the Saudi Arabian desert.
What?
They weren't in the Saudi Arabian
so
desert.
So he, in this book, Howard Bloom, he's not a religious Jew, he makes a very compelling argument that we were. And you cannot ignore it. Compelling argument that we were.
Northern part.
Very compelling. And I'm very curious. I didn't read enough of the book enough time. Is to read what Alexander Huhl has to say about this. Alexander Huhl is a genius of geniuses. He's a scientist. He does his homework, does his research. He has a whole book on this. And he has all of the popular suggestions as to where exactly is Har Sinai. And that's a critical thing to know. Because I told you the story with I used to go to Mincha by Shmimin Shulman, the Rav Simcha Soloveitchik used to be there. So they were talking, got into a discussion about Har Sinai. I told him, I said to him in my foolishness, I said to him, who cares? What difference does it make? It's what is it relevant? Where Har Sinai, what difference does it make? So he exploded. He's a real brisker. He exploded and he said to me, if the Torah says there's a place called Har Sinai. It's kedai to know where it is and to understand everything there is to know about it. If it wasn't important, Torah wouldn't tell you anything about it. The Klal Yisrael received the Torah. Where they receive, so wherever, you know, Medrash. The Torah says, "Bemidbar vayichan sham Yisrael neged ha'har." There is a mountain called Har Sinai. If the Torah tells you there's a makom in the world called Har Sinai, it's kedai to know exactly where it is and everything there is to know about it. It's worthy. Just because you're living in America over here and you're a spoiled brat, doesn't mean you shouldn't have an appreciation. Where exactly is Har Sinai? It's very unlikely that Har Sinai is where they go on tours in the southern border of Eretz Yisrael, right up against Egypt. I don't know where it is. Sinai, this was a big thing back in the day after one of the wars. Israel conquered the War of Independence. They conquered almost the whole southern region, and they couldn't really deal with it. It was too much on their plate, so they gave it back. Right, everyone. I don't remember the whole history anymore. I forgot everything. Right, but the history of the state of Israel, they once upon a time conquered Sinai, and people settled there. People actually settled there. It was like Gush Katif. It was like Gaza. And then the government decided we're giving it back.
Yamit.
What?
Yamit
was before Sinai.
Right. It was in Sinai. It was further.
And people were suicidal. I remember there's a whole story where they had to go bring it. Rav Avadi Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the government called upon him when they were giving it back, and they were trying to have the people to move out. There were people that were mamish suicidal. They didn't want to leave. They went crazy, and the government called in Rav Avadi Yosef to come down and speak to these people personally.
It's simple. You tell them you'll have to hold 2 days Yom Tov. If you stay there, they'll go right.
No. 3 days of Yom Tov. You'll have to hold Shavuos 3 days. 3 day Yom Tov. Oh, 3 day Yom Tov? I'm out of here. Israelis can handle 3 day Yom Tov. It's hard enough for him 2 day Yom Tov. They have Rosh Hashanah. When 2 days Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos come together, if Sinai is Chutz La'aretz, many Paiskim will say that Sinai is not. You have to observe 2 days younger than Sinai. Eilat, how many days? Eilat, that part of the country. I don't know. The point over here is
there's a famous, you know, the. That they sell the rock where each time you split it, the bush.
So someone showed it to me. I always wanted to see the rock. So someone actually, he brought it in for me. He showed it to me. Showed me the rock. It's very interesting. You see a little line, like a bush. And no matter how many times you break it, I always wanted to see it. Baruch Hashem, I got to see it. And that's from Sinai. That's from the south. That's not from Saudi Arabia. And this is the thing. There are many. Even they have. He showed me the box. It came in a box. This little rack, and it has haskamas from a gedolei. It had a little settle inside from what all the gedolei Yisrael said about it. So, the gedolei Yisrael are gedolei Yisrael. You know, we have to have. And if they said they spoke. Oh, Taki. They said all these very nice things. So they don't realize by saying all these nice things they cannot giving a haskama. That's where Har Sinai is, which is far from simple. And it really, when they wrote these nice things, they wrote the authentic.
It makes no difference because once the Torah was given, you can go on the mountain, you can go.
Right, in the Hanami. It has no Kedusha. Right. So that's really what I said to him. If it has no Kedusha anymore, like Shiloh. Shiloh, Klal Yisrael was in Shiloh for 369 years. Today, Shiloh is, there's nothing there. Literally nothing.
Didn't they find a bomb in there?
So who says that bum? Who made that? Maybe told me that bum 50 years ago. Maybe some Arab.
I wondered there was a Torah over there, so it's a Shiloh.
So Shiloh. But right now, Shiloh, Klal Yisrael was there, the Shoiftim. The whole Tekufa of the Shoiftim took place when Mishkan Shiloh. 369 years, according to most Mepharshim, Shiloh is synonymous Vayihi B'mois HaShoiftim. Bimei Hashoiftim, Shefoit Hashoiftim, in Rus, the whole era of the Shoiftim is Shiloh, and go to Shiloh today, and what do you see there? Zero, nothing. Where did it all go? 369 years, Klal Yisrael came to be oil the regal, and that's what the Shechinah was Shoira, and they lived. This is mamish, and what's there now is nothing. They do now excavation. They're trying to find things here and there. They're first starting to try to go figure out what's going on over there, but there's no zecher, and the truth is there's no kedusha. Shiloh was a bama gedola, and after it was Chorav, may Eli, it was a war with the Polishim, Eli, Chofni, Pinchas, that's it. No more Kedusha. Finish. So I said to him, so what's the purpose? There's no Kedusha. What? You're going to go there and daven there? Is there any value in going to Shiloh and davening? Maybe it's better to go over here to McDonald Avenue, to Washington Cemetery, and daven by Kvarm over here. There's more Kedusha on McDonald Avenue. Over here in Flatbush, to go daven by some holy people.
It might be counterproductive to go daven by a boma.
What?
It might be counterproductive to daven by a boma.
So let's get about the boma. Make believe the boma. Let's assume there is no boma, because who says anything there is authentic?
And even if,
but the mokoyim. Forget about the boma. Let's say it's squeaky clean. They'll do all the radar. There's nothing. Everything that was ever there was completely is gone. So, but it's a mokoyim. Do you know what happened in this Mokim? This Mokim was the Mokim Hashua Sashrina for Klal Yisrael for 369 years. We can't even fathom the sanctity. That was all, and they moved. So the Mokim is invested with sanctity. So we'll go there and we'll daven there. You don't need a kever. You don't need nothing. Garnish. Go there and just daven there. L'chayr, it's a Mokim that's mesugal to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No. L'chayr, there's nothing there. Okay, Har Sinai. Har Sinai, Zildach. So he told me that I'm wrong. Or Simcha Salvechik told me that I'm wrong. There's something to it. There is. Akseh, we'll go with the business now. Or go make tours.
Well, they have these famous stories that this is where the place where the Gro used to daven, there was a Kedusha.
Oh, right.
You know, there's something there.
Rav Don Segel. So that's really what he was saying. Yeah. That's really that the Milan, the Roshim on the Mokim is still there. Believe me, if they knew today with precision, with absolute certainty, where Har Sinai was, I guarantee you, if you open up Mishpacha magazine, you'll find 500 advertisements. Come spend the Yom Tif of Shavuos at Har Sinai.
With Pesach Kron.
And we have Shadchanim there. And we're going to have food like you never saw before. Oh, yeah. Only $5,000 a person.
The Shechon go down to Kriyas Yamsov.
Come, spend with us Yom Tif on Har.
So you at Sinai.
So you at Sinai. Right, Shaduchim, right? Shaduchim. Come spend Pesach in the hotel. We're going to build a hotel at Har. Uman would be nothing. Keneged spending Shavuos at Har. No, he can't do better than that. To go spend Shavuos at Har Sinai, why don't they have tour? You never saw such an advertisement. For many reasons. First of all, no one knows where Har Sinai is. Yeah. No one. And number two, even if they did, Saudi Arabia would never let Jews come. They would never let us in. Never. Who says Saudi Arabia? Maybe it's not Saudi Arabia. Maybe it's...
You don't want to go there. They let us go to Egypt.
So a lot of people say that's not really. That's what I'm saying. The people they're not so excited. That's really Har Sinai. It became a crazy. It became a place. A lot of Meshugam, they hang out over there. It's not such a good place. That place. Any event. Let's get back to our topic over here. All I want. What?
It's hard to imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu went on foot when he was chased away from the Mitzrayim, and he came to that place. So he didn't go to Saudi Arabia. He went to the Hatsia Isinai.
It could be. All right, that's part of the question.
By one person to go to Saudi Arabia from there.
He was in Midian. Yeah. Moshe fled to Midian.
Yeah. How far is what you think is Har Sinai from its shrine walking by foot? You can't walk it. It's 100, 300, 400 miles.
Moshe was a fugitive. Moshe went to Midian. Where was Midian? That's what Midian. The Har Sinai, by the way, is according to Chazal, is the same exact location as the Sne. Vinei Asne inenu uka. Moshe was a fugitive. He went to Midian. If Midian, now, no one really knows anything, but the argument is, if and Pharaoh wanted to kill him, if Moshe went, what we call to the Sinai Peninsula, it wouldn't have been very difficult for Egypt, who is a world power, to get him. It's not so far away. The Sinai Peninsula is on the border of Egypt. It's even part of Egypt. So why wasn't Paro able, and that's Midian, that was a whole nation, Midian. And he had seven daughters, and he had the well. So Egypt, they couldn't go snatch him in Midian?
There is a yam separated the mountains.
I don't know. It's very complicated. A lot of these, what we see today is dried up. We have satellite images. All of this is a big, big mystery. This took place 3,335 years ago. 3,335 years ago. Look, we don't even know. You take out some pictures. If you go online and you take out a picture, I saw a picture. I was playing around. I saw a picture of this shul, the corner of this block, what it looked like in 1940 or 1930. You wouldn't recognize it. You would not recognize the corner of this. It looked like a house. There was a house here. It looked very nice and clean. It was very pleasant. I don't know what happened to Flavish. 1941. I think I saw a picture of this shul. There was no building here. There was a house. It was like a residential, like a very, very quiet. There's no car. So you mamish wouldn't recognize it. You would not recognize it. If we can't recognize what this looked like 80 years ago, do we think we can recognize what the world looked like 3,335 years ago? Could we understand? It's impossible. It's totally impossible to trace back to understand the whole dynamics of geopolitics and where people live and the nations and how the world worked. It's a very geopolitics, or how we're all different countries.
The geospatial more, because they used the satellite to figure out where the roads were and everything. Kalman, yeah, if you had, let's say, 6 million people going out of the shrine, going through the midbar, they would leave a path. The path wouldn't be 20 feet wide. It would be 300, 400, 500 feet wide at least. It's not 1,000 people. So with satellites, they look at all the places where there's no vegetation, where there's no feet. There's no way to go into the midbar, what you call Midbar Sinai. The only road is going down the coast of Sinai to a Sharm el-Sheikh, where you have paths or width that they can go. That's why he came to his theory.
I'll
talk to you later, but plus which the Egyptians had garrisons in the Midbar. If you know about the Nabataeans, they found in Midbar Sinai there are rock paintings on the rocks. There was a tribe called Nabataeans. They also went all the way to Jordan. So they had forts. Mitzrayim, the Medrash says you couldn't get out of Mitzrayim, right?
Yes.
They had forts in what
but
we call Midbar Sinai, which may have been green then.
Yeah.
They had forts to all way, so you couldn't escape. So
no, that's not necessarily what the Medrash means by that.
All right.
Let's go further. Mr. Cole, you want to say something? Mr. Cole. Rabbi Sai.
What I want to say is, some years back, I did a search.
Yeah.
For Jews in Saudi Arabia. So it was a long article, and it mentioned with Muhammad from the 6th century that there were Jewish communities, Jewish tribes.
Villages, yeah.
In Saudi Arabia. But they were separate, and then the Muslims took conquered them. You can look it up, because it led to a encyclopedia. It was an article of that saying that up to the 6th century, I think I might have it at home.
It was the Quraishi tribe, and they made a treaty with them, and then they Muhammad broke the treaty and massacred them.
Yeah, they either you converted or you were killed.
What else is
new? Okay, let's go further.
This
is a very interesting topic to me, because when you talk about the desert, you're getting desert is a world to itself. The Eretz, and here you have over here, everything in this film is precise. The Eretz Tzio, the Oyef Beli Moim. There are three terms here describing the desert. Which desert? Well, it doesn't be Midbar Yehuda. What's Midbar Yehuda? Here, it's as we learned, the Zif. where are these places? Okay, some say that we know where they are. Fine. Let's go naked. That's it. Let's not go on to new territory. Pasuk Gimel. Cain, likewise, Bakoidesh Chazisicha Lirois Uzucha Uchvaidech. Likewise, Bakoidesh. In holiness, Chazisicha, I have seen you. I have seen you. Lirois Uzucha, to see your might, Uchvaidech. What does this pasuk mean? Let's see Mitzudas David, Pasuk Gimel on the page 543. Pasuk Gimel came, Bakoidesh Kumo Hatsamei. Just like a person who was thirsty, I have the same yearning. Cain es ave lachazois oiska bimkoim hakodesh. The lirois uzucha shehu haaron. I want to see your might, the aron im hakavoid asher yishkoin olav. Right away, we learn over here from the mitzvah stuff that this pasuk over here is very mysterious and very abstract, and everything over here is a metaphor, And everyone over here, when you have something like this, then obviously then everyone's going to go off on their own and say things that no one has, and everyone's going to say completely different things. And right away, the Mitzvah of it says the word uzicha is a metaphor, is a code word for the Oroin HaKodesh. That's interesting. That you don't get that too often. We say the Torah, Hashem Oz Liamo Yitain, Hashem Yivarech Esmo Vashalom. Oz is Torah. Hashem Oz, Hashem has given the Oz to his nation, Yitain. Oz. So here, the Oz, the Torah, the Luchos are placed in the Oroin HaKodesh. So that's really how the Mitzvah stuff is learning, that I yearn to see your Torah. I want to go to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan. Kiryas Yorim. This was after the Churban of Noive Givon. And between Noive Givon, where was the Oroin located? In Kiryas Yorim. And David now is running away for his life from Shaul. I want to go back and be in the presence of the Oroin HaKodesh, a mokum of sanctity, and that's Cain likewise. And now, what's the word Cain? This is also very mysterious. According to the Mitzudas, it is a segue between the previous pasuk and this pasuk. The previous pasuk talks about David's yearning, his yearning for Hashem, and then he ends up by talking about that he's thirsty. He says, Cain goes on the thirst. I'm thirsty, just like my body is thirsty, so too my neshama is thirsty to see you, which means to be in your presence, which I want. There are two expressions over here for sight. Cha zi si cha. I want to see you in a place of holiness. And then he repeats himself.
The translation of chazi si cha is not to see you, it's to envision you.
Okay, chazoin. Chazoin yishayo ben amoitz. Okay, a vision. Okay, so
a vision in the
mind, prophecy. Okay, it's to envision. It's a state of spirituality, a state of spirituality, which we're going to use this word called the chazoin. Excellent. And then he says, liros is to see. Also, sight also can refer to a spiritual state. Uzicha, what's uzicha? Critical. It means the arayin, uchvaydecha. And what's uchvaydecha? So what's the honor here? The kavod asher yishkoin lov. What does that mean? The kavod, the amud anon, amud esh. There was no amud anon, amud esh at the time of after they came into Eretz Yisrael. So what is the kavod that he's referring to? Obviously, there must be some type of aura, some type of sense of greatness that rested upon the aura in which we're totally unaware of because we're in Galus. So this is a very passionate pasuk again. Let's see the
Shechina itself.
Right. So what does that mean exactly? What does it mean, the Shechina? What is it? You can touch it. You can. What does that mean? We don't understand because there's a Churban, so we don't understand. But it has to mean that when the Shechina was resting in the Beis HaMikdash, just coming there, you can sense covered. What is covered? What does that mean? I don't know. These are very, you know, we just translate. They're very simple. They're very, very deep. Rashi says, Kein Bakodesh Chazisicha Kimo Kasher. Same thing as the Mitzvah David. Just like Tzomesi, just like I'm thirsty, so too my neshama has an equivalent sensation, an equivalent desire to be in the presence of holiness. Lirois Uzcha Chvaydecha Kederch Shechazisicha B'mikdash Mishkan Shiloi. Just like, he's saying something different. I didn't realize this. He's saying something very, very different. He's saying just like, it's a little misleading. First he goes back on being thirsty, but he says, just like I saw you in Mishkan Shiloi, likewise, I want to see you now In other words, Kimo kasher tzamesi liras uzcha uchvaydecha, kederech shechazisicha b'mikdash mishkan shiloi, tisva nafshi b'maris uzcha uchvaydecha. I want to see you again. I want to ask you a question. Did David really ever see Mishkan Shiloi? You got to go do the math. David lived in time of Mishkan Shiloi? Really? That's a chiddush to me. David was not alive in Mishkan Shiloi. David was 57 years. How old was David? David only lived to the age of 70. And David already brought the Aron to Ir David at the end of his life. How many year gap was there between the time they brought the Aron after, again, Mishkan Shiloh, the Messiah is a total, both of those places together, I think 57 years. Both of them together.
Why do we think Rashi is saying that he saw it? It was like the way it was seen.
No, Kedera says the way you were seen.
The way you were seen.
The way you were seen. Shedri Sikha, the way you were seen. The way Hashem
Kederech was seen. Kederech Shecha Zisicha.
The way you were seen.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. Or maybe you do the math. Maybe David really did see. This is something very interesting. Maybe you got to do the math. This is very, very interesting because it would totally change our let's go back to that story. It happened 2 weeks ago in Eretz Yisrael during the riots. 1.5 million people come to go make trouble. And where do they come? To Bnei Brak. Where else do you go? You know, this is before Pesach. Maisa, Msum, Bnei Brak. You go to Bnei Brak. And who are they greeted by? A group of people who start playing music and start giving out food, and they start playing Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem, the traditional nigun. And everyone saw this video, I'm sure, and this fellow who looks like he's in his 60s. I don't know, how old does he look like, in his 60s? Something like that. And he comes out and he begins to cry, and he takes off his helmet and he starts putting up his hands and singing with his whole neshama, Shalom Aleichem. A guy who came to fight, who came to make a machah against the Charid, all of a sudden he melts away. How did that happen? Because obviously when he was a child, he sat by his grandparents and they sang Shalom Aleichem. And he had such beautiful memories. And somehow, something happened in his life, and he became a chiloni, and he had a hate for the Haredim. And now, something triggered that memory. It brought him back to that state in life, and you watch him. It's unbelievable. It's just, you got to see the video. There, you saw the video? You have to see this video clip of what happened when they started playing Shalom Aleichem. And you see the clip? About a couple of weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, there was, you have to go online to find, there was, maybe you'll post it online for us, there was a protest. Supposedly 1.5 million chilonim made a protest against the government, against Bibi Netanyahu's government, who is trying to change judicial reform, okay? Trying to change the power to minimize or to change the power of the Supreme Court of the State of Israel. The Chilonim did not accept this, and they launched a massive, massive protest for days, for a week. I don't know how long it's still going on. And now they came, part of their protest, they came to Bnei Barak with a Haredim are, in order to show them, don't think you're going to get away with this. The Haredim, some of them were not so nice, but some of them, many of them, they had a new plan, a new technique, never seen this before. They brought out food, hot, delicious food, and they played on these loudspeakers, "You're coming to us, Shalom Aleichem, welcome." And they played on the loudspeaker, was it live or recorded? Beautiful singer, one of the big celebrities, was singing the classic Shalom Aleichem that you sing Friday night at the table. Okay, how does it go? Anyone have a good menagin over here to sing? The classic, not the regish, not the regish version. Not the regish version. Shalom Aleichem to you. I haven't seen you in a long time. Welcome. Welcome back. Came to sing the Shalom Aleichem, right? Came to sing the Shalom Aleichem. And what happened? So one of these protesters, who was probably well into his 60s, and he was wearing a helmet, like a football helmet, because he thought that the Haredim were going to bash his head. Throw rocks at him. He hears this singer singing that melody, and he broke down. He had a meltdown, and he starts to cry. He mamish starts to cry. He takes off his helmet, and he starts with his swing, and with his hands, and there are tears coming down his cheek. It's really very powerful. Now, how is it possible that could happen? The answer is obvious. When he was a child, he must have been sitting by his grandparents, and the grandparents Friday night were singing Shalom Aleichem, and he has those beautiful, beautiful memories of his youth. So what happened to him all these years? I don't know. Whatever happened, happened. No one's to blame him. Whatever happened, happened. And he became a chiloni. He came to protest with a helmet. And he was taken back to his youth. And he became a different person. Why am I telling this to you? This is a pella what it says here in this passage, according to what it says over here in Rashi, if it's true what I'm saying. David HaMelech, what did he want to do his whole life? To build for Hashem a Beis HaMikdash. It was a chiddush. David, one day he wakes up, I'm living in a palace, and the Oron of Hashem is in a curtain, in the Kaloim. Is just in some shed. I'm the Melech. Finally, all the haftachas of the Ribbono Shel Olam came true. Hashem promised me I would be the Melech. Hashem was true to his word. I became the Melech. And I built a beautiful palace. And where is the Aron Hashem? In a shed, in a tent, in Beeria, in a curtain. It's not there. So David calls up, takes out his smartphone, and he calls up Nasan Hanavi. He has them on speed dial. I got to talk to you. Get over here right now. And let's meet. Let's go meet in 7-Eleven. And they sit down and they talk. Okay? I'll meet you in Essen on Coney. They sit down and they talk. Guess, I have an idea. I want to build for Hashem a Beis HaMikdash. So Nasan says, great idea. Who's stopping you? Do it. Get to work. What wonderful. Who stopped? Do it. Wow. What a beautiful idea. So David goes home and right away gets to work, calls up all of his fundraising, gets to work on the blueprints, gets to work on everything. Hashem comes to Nasan Hanavi in the middle of that and says, Nasan, what did you tell David? To do this? Who told you to tell him? You're not the balabas here. Who told you to? Who, you didn't consult with me. You just give him permission? What do you think you are over here? David comes to you, he asks the Navi, and you just say, yeah, it's a great idea. No, it's not. David has blood on his hands. David can't do this. I don't want him to do this. I want his son, Shlomo. David can lay the foundation, can do the blueprints. Go to him in the middle of the night. Because if you're gonna wait, right now he's already at work. Right now he's already calling up people and doing fundraising and getting everyone involved. You're already too late, but at least stop him. Stop him right now. Tell him, who told you to give him permission to do this? Since when did the Aroyan Hashem reside in the bias? All the years, the Haftarah, this was the Haftarah a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember which parasha it was the Haftarah a couple of weeks ago. Since when does the Shechina rest in the bias? I'm very happy in a Uriah. I have a sukkah, you know, one of the old-fashioned Canada sukkahs. I don't need a bias, a palace. Who gave you permission to tell him to go build a Beis HaMikdash? Go tell him no. It's a nice idea. You know, the next generation, v'chula v'chula. Question. Why did David even want to do this? Today, you know, in the world, we live in a new modern world. Every time a person commits a crime, so they blame the kindergarten teacher. That's the world we live in today. How come, where did you go wrong? You didn't, you cheat on your tax return. which kindergarten teacher, nursery teacher is to blame for this crime? Because they weren't nice to you, so it triggered in your mind a ganza. You know, there's some truth to it, a little bit at least. Where in David's youth did David see the glory of Hashem that he wanted to replicate it on even a greater level? So it's something over here is very interesting. Over here, Rashi says, can you tell me that Stanis of Shat, got to do the math. The same way your glory was seen in Mishkan Shiloh, and it was, Mishkan Shiloh is a Bama Gedoyla in its full glory. It was the first major bayis for Hashem. There was the Mishkan in the desert, then the Mishkan in Gilgal for 14 years, and then it was a chiddush. We're going to build for Hashem a bayis, stone walls, no more kerushim, a stone structure, a real bayis, no real stuff over here. For 369 years. And then what happened? It was Charav. It was destroyed by the Pelishtim. When was it destroyed? During the time of Eli HaKoyin, when his two sons, Hophni and Pinchas, were corrupt. There was corruption, and Kohanim, the institution of Kohanim, became corrupt, and things took a sour turn, and Hashem had enough, and it was Chorav. There was a war, and Mishkan doesn't have very little information of how it was Chorav, very little information, but the Pelishtim came, and they destroyed Mishkan Shiloh, at the time when Eli HaKohen died, Nishpo Aroin Elokim. Yes. And the Aroin of Elokim was captured. Yeah. The tragedy of Churban Shiloh was beyond our understanding. But before it was destroyed, the glory of Hashem was like none other. Now, let's make a calculation. What happened after Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed? There was a short period of time when the Aron was by the Pelishtim. I think it was 6 months, right? 6 months? It was only 6 months, and then they started dying from hemorrhoids. All these strange things started happening to them, and they realized, hey, we're in a lot of trouble. We gotta get rid of the Aron. The Aron's gonna kill us all. And they sent it back with an agola and calves, parois, vatosharna haparois. And the parois sang all these miracles, and they sent it back to David. And David was afraid what to do with it, so they put it in this place and that place. It went. Eventually, it went to Noiv and Givoin. No, I make a mistake. I'm sorry. That story with Dabwadu, that was later on. But after they got it back, it was a new Mishkan, a small little Mishkan, probably very similar to what was in the desert, called Noiv. And then what happened to Noiv? David was running away from Shaul. He was running away from Shaul. So he went and he was starving to death, Bulmus. He was starving to death and he had no weapons. He went to Noiv and they gave him, it was poverty there. They gave him the lechem upon him to eat. Bikuach nefesh, he's not a kohen David. Bikuach nefesh, they gave him the lechem upon him on the shulchan to eat because he's starving to death. He has no weapons. They gave him the sword of Goliath. Doyeg Adomi was an informer. He told Shaul, you know that David, he ran to Noiv Ir HaKoyhanim, where the Mishkan, the Aron was located, the little Mishkan, and they gave him the lechem upon him, and they gave him Goliath's sword. So Shaul says, executive order, kill them all, or wipe them out. Kill them all, no survivors. Go to Noiv Ir HaKoyhanim and kill all the Koyhanim. Because they're all murdered by Malchus by giving him food and giving him the sword of God. That's what happened. A tragedy beyond belief. That was the end of Noiv. Mm-hmm. Where did the Aron go next? New shop, set up Givoin, a new location. How long was it there for? It's not so clear the number of years, but we do know as a fact that the total number of years that the Aron was located in Noiv and Givoin was 57 years. Then what happened? Then there was some period of time that it's not really clear where the Aron was temporary. And you look at David, I don't remember all the details. It was here, it was there. And David then said, the time now has come to bring it to my...
David must have been like 12 years old.
Oh, exactly. So I'm trying to suggest here that it's very possible indeed. Now, 57 years, David lived to the age of 70. And David, at the end of his life, wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash, and he was shut down. It's very likely when David was a child, there's 13 years left, but probably have to deduct some of that. David saw the tail end, of Shiloh, and that, what you, a child, the impression that you make, a child's mind is like wet cement. The glory that he saw in Shiloh, the tail end of Shiloh, lived within him. His whole, and right away in the beginning of his life, when he was a child, it was Charef. So he's, let's say, but by the time, by 13, by the time he was 13, he was ready to show you. The image of the glory made such an impression on him, that is what triggered. That's what triggered. That's what triggered to restore the glory of Hashem in building a Beis HaMikdash. You always have to ask the question. People do things. Why? What's making you tick? What's pushing you to do this? What pushed David to, I want to build, he comes to Nasan HaNavi at the end of his life, I want to build for Hashem a bayis, a glorious bayis. Why? Who gave you this idea? Which YouTube movie have you been watching? Who gave you this idea?
Well, it's interesting. He mentions the end about, seeing the Gemara in Chagiga, the beginning, talks about when the Yidden were Olei Regel, not only did they come to see Hashem, Hashem came to see them. They saw one another.
They saw one another. Okay, but that's
what he's
describing. That's another pshat. You're saying another pshat.
That's the key word here. Lihu'ot. Lihu'ot ul'hera'ot. Shalosh pamim b'shana yeira'e kol zchucha et p'nei Adon Hashem. Wherever it is. So if it's Shiloh, if it's in Gibbon, it doesn't matter. So lihu'ot, lihu'ot l'hera'ot. So this, he remembers that, and he knows that pasuk. As Omer, I saw it already. What was that? So now, I want to live out the old Pama. Now I need to bow. That's nothing.
Okay,
I want to focus on Rashi. Rav Mordechai, he's saying a beautiful idea, but let's focus on Rashi for one moment. Rashi here, it doesn't say anywhere here the word Shiloh in the Pasuk. Rashi, it says the word Mikdash. Shiloh, relative to Noiv and Givoin, was a Mikdash. It was a structure. It was a Bama Gedoyle, it was a Shechazal, say, it was stone walls. It had, the ceiling was Urias, but it was no...
Shiloh, Rashi says Shiloh.
So I'm saying, that's what I'm trying to say now. Shiloh, so what is... Now, let's make the calculation. And we do know, as a fact in life, things that people yearn to do are seeded when they're children. People, they're grown, they see things as children, and it makes an impression upon them, and we don't even realize what goes on subconsciously in the person's mind. As you get older, your ideas, they form, and you want to restore or build upon things that made an impression upon you when you're very young. When you get older, things don't make an impression upon you. You're just more of the same. But when you're young, you're impressionable. It's very like the calculation, it seems like, we have to do more research, is that when David was a child, he saw the glory of Shiloh.
I hear what you're saying, it's an interesting thing, but you don't have to say that, because it's not that he saw. So you can see that you were just like you were seen. I would like to see you just like you were seen with the old generation.
What is the literal translation? She, we have an expert over here in grammar. She, cha, zi, sicha.
Just like you were seen.
She, cha, zi, sicha.
What do you say, Calvin? What is it? To mean I saw you or you were seen? No.
Even the small children.
No, we're not asking that question. The question is, does that mean I saw you or you were seen?
Both of them.
Well, the Gemara says it's to be seen.
Yeah, that's talks about when
God's saying, I want to see you.
That's what I'm saying.
I
want
to see you.
We have to make the calculation. The calculation is deduct the 57 years, and shortly afterwards, David wanted to build for Hashem a bayis. It's very likely David did indeed witness the glory of Hashem in Shiloh. It doesn't say that anywhere. You never heard it. There's no zecher that David was a child there in Shiloh. You saw what went on in Shiloh, but do the math. L'chori he did as a child, And now, when Rashi injects in this pasuk, David is sitting over here, is just like you were seen, fine, you were seen. How do you know, David? How do you know this? There were no videos. How do you know this? Because when I was a child. Now, the time has come. Now, I want to see you again in that matzah. I want to see the restoration of such a glory. Cain, Bakoidesh Chazi Sicha, Lirois Uzicha Uchvaidecha, Rashi, the whole Rashi, there's a lot going on here in this pasuk, but Rashi is alluding to this. Cain, Bakoidesh Chazi Sicha, Kimo. The word came in similarly. Kasher, then he says, so just like Kasher Tzomesi Lirois Uzicha Uchvodecha, Kiderech Shechazisicha b'mikdash Mishkan Shilohi. Tispa Navshi b'maris Uzicha Uchvodecha, my neshama should be satisfied once again to see the return of that glory. Not the glory of Noivin. David for sure saw Noiv, because David went to get the lechem upon him in Noiv. So David saw the glory of Noiv. He's not saying over Rashi over here, he's saying, oh, I want to see you again like I saw you in Noiv Ir HaKoyhanim. He was there. He was right inside the Heichel, in the Heichel. They gave the lechem upon him. Right? He was starving. How come he doesn't want to talk about Noiv? Because Noiv was a me'ain of the glory of Shiloh. Noiv was just a bama katana. It wasn't a substantial.
It was also older, so it made less of an impression than the.
Okay, in Shiloh, 369 years, the glory of Shiloh is something that is there's a lot to study, a lot to be said about it. Okay, in fact, when we learn Yeshaya, it goes back a long time ago, Baruch Hashem, we learn Yeshaya. The worst insult that you can say to the Jew, when a Navi spoke to Klal Yisrael, going back over the time, the Bayis Rishay. This is clear as day. You learn this in the Nevi'im. It comes up a few times, and it's in Mamash in the Kinos on Tisha B'Av. When the Nevi'im with Musar to Klal Yisrael on time of the Bayis Rishay, the nastiest thing you can possibly say to Klal Yisrael by far, and they would literally kill you for saying this, if you don't behave, it's going to happen to you like what happened to Shiloh. That was a raw nerve. Just like Shiloh was destroyed, the Bayis Rishon will be destroyed. This Beis HaMikdash. Comparing, predicting there's going to be a Churban in the Bayis Rishon, just like Shiloh came to an end after 69 years, you say that, they'll come for blood. They'll come after you. It was a very painful because it's like an hour lifetime, the Holocaust. The Holocaust, you don't mess around with the Holocaust. Holocaust is sensitive because it's real, because everyone remembers their grandparents. Everyone today, you know, they have a taste, and certainly go back 10, 15 years ago, go back 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Holocaust, you know, this is a very touchy topic. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's going to happen again. You don't talk like that. Talk like that. And when you go and you talk like that on a national level, you go on television, you go on the radio, and you go and you make public speeches like this, it's going to happen over here to the Mikdash, like what happened to Shiloh. That was, you've stepped above over the red line in your speech and how you talk to Klal Yisrael, and they're going to shut you down. They're going to deplatform you. Because you can't talk like that. That's not derech eretz to talk to Klal Yisrael with such nasty terms. From that concept I just told you is in Yeshaya. That appears in Yeshaya in the Mepharshim, and it's even in the Kinos, this idea. And what do we take out of that? The Churban of Shiloh was so painful only because the glory of Hashem's presence in Shiloh was so great. It was so great. Shiloh, again, is the Zman of the Shoiftim. And I'll give you, I actually saw this last night. I was trying to prepare for today, and I'm not going to do it. After trying to go through the thing, but in that thing that I was trying to prepare, it spoke about, it says in the Pasuk by the Shoiftim, by Yom Mohem, in those days, Ein Melech B'Yisrael. Ish HaYosher B'Einov Yaseh. Stop anyone on the street and ask them to translate that pasuk, and ask them, is that a compliment or an insult? And give me a level of, on a scale of 1 to 10. Anyone that I would meet and I would say this, it's an insult. 1 to 10, 10 plus. 10 plus. There's no melech. Ein melech b'Yisrael. Ish hayosha bein avyase. Don't tell me what to do. You come to shul like, we don't have a rabbi in our shul. We don't have a rabbi. We do whatever we want. Who needs a rabbi? A rabbi is going to tell us, don't talk during davening. Don't do this, don't do this. Hey! Ish hayosha bein avyase. It is l'choira, the biggest insult you can possibly say. So, it's not, that's not necessarily the pshat. Who says it's not the pshat? I think I'm Avigdor Miller. If I'm not mistaken, I'm Avigdor Miller. It's not the pshat. Pum fakert, it's the greatest compliment. It's a compliment, not 10 plus, 10 with all, with exponents, with new exponents. Bayim ein melech, there was no need for a melech. You know why? Because ish hayosha be'einav, yosha means they did what was yosha. Be'einav is not to mean or whatever I think. It means the eyes of Hashem. Hayashar in the eyes of Hashem. Ish hayashar be'enav. What was correct in the eyes of Hashem, they would do. A melech is someone who forces you to get in line. Because if there's no melech, you're going to go off the derech hayashar. So you need a person to whip you into shape. But if you're a good person, you don't need a melech to whip you into shape because everyone is doing the right thing. Klal Yisrael was on such an exalted level of spirituality by Yomarim Ein Melech Yisrael. You know why? You know why there's no Melech? You don't need a Melech. Ish HaYosha Be'ein Av Yaseh. Every man did what was Yosha in the eyes of Hashem. That's right, Avigdor Miller. If I'm not mistaken, that's Pashup Shah on the Pasuk. Pashup Shah on the Pasuk.
So small time, what do you need a melech for?
That could end later, it became a little bit corrupt, right? But that was the Shmuel's much later. Shmuel's post the Shaifdim. Post 369 Shiloi is Vahi Bimei Shefait HaShaifdim. This is the Tekuva. So what do you take out of that? Shiloi, the era of Shiloi, the glory of Shiloi was unsurpassed. It was a time that we can't even fathom the sanctity of Klal Yisrael during that era. And David witnessed the tail end. Why am I greater than my friends? I saw the back of Rebbe Meir. I saw Me'achayrov. David saw the back, the tail end of the glory of Mishkan Mikdash, Mishkan, new term, I never heard that term before. The Mikdash Mishkan Shiloh. He had a word before. The Mikdash of Mishkan Shiloh. And then when David was a child, it appears, when he was a little child, it was Choref. Can you imagine the trauma? The trauma to a holy, sensitive soul like David of seeing the Mikdash Mishkan Shiloh be Choref, Eli HaKohen dying, and his two children, Hovni and Pinchas, dying. The trauma. And that is what powered David's entire life to restore, and it comes down to this pasuk according to Rashi. Cain, all these beautiful expressions, Elokim Kaliata, Ashachareka, Samalucha Navshi, Kamalucha Visari. He's talking about his youth. He's talking about the seeds that were planted when he was a child, witnessing the glory. Cain, Bakoidesh Chazisicha Lirois Uzchuk Vaidecha, Halavai, we should see you once again now, the way we saw you in Mikdash, that was his life mission, culminating with wanting to build the Beis HaMikdash, and Nasan HaNavi, David's whole life was just one disappointment after another. Could you imagine the disappointment when Nasan HaNavi comes back in the middle of the night and says to him, I've misspoken? Hashem said, no. No is no. Stand down. You will not build for Hashem a Beis HaMikdash. What a disappointment. The culmination of all disappointments. His life dream and his disappointments. I told this many times, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, the one who is credited for really taking Yeshiva University to new levels of excellence and success. So he died, everyone knows he died, was it 2 years already? 2 years, in the middle of COVID. And when they were maspid him, there were many people repeated this, is that what made him tick? What made him tick? Why was he so, why was he his whole life more and more and more working? You know, where does the Energizer bunny get his power from? where did he get that power from? And they repeated this many times, that when he was a child in the third grade, he had a friend in third grade. Third grade friend, and the kid one day died. His third grade friend just one day tragically died. It shook him up to the core. And like he, in third grade, he, wow, life is very short. Look at that. Look how short life is. Life ends just like that. I better do something with myself, because I could be just like, I'll die tomorrow, just like my friend. And that had such a traumatic effect of his friend dying, triggered him to just never run out of steam. Never run out of steam. His son, Shalom Lam, okay, his son, my parents were very close with his son, Shalom Lam, and Rabbi Lam also. He was very, very, very kind to my father, Zohar Levracha. And I told him, you know, I have at home a letter from my bar mitzvah from Rabbi Lam. My father invited Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam to my bar mitzvah. So my father didn't expect he would come, but my father was close with him. So he wrote a letter. He wrote back this beautiful letter, and I have it at home. Maybe I should bring and show it to you if you find it, where it is. And I remember my mother, Lashem, looking at the letter, like not long before she passed away, and like she was like shaken up, and like she says, "Who could do this? Who could write like it was like a short letter, but it was so well written, and so powerful. Like where do you see the English? Of course, in English. Like where do you see this today?" Like today, you know, you have an invitation, like, and he was like such a busy person, like you know, he was busy. So I told this to Shalom Lam, and he said to me, you know, it's interesting what you're saying. A lot of people told me the same thing. They have these like these letters, Klachayat, and the family is just bewildered. How in the world did he have time to write all these letters? He was so busy, and the number of these letters, it seems, is like enormous. Like he wrote letters to everyone, everything, every event, and like, you know, I know if I have to write a reply card to a wedding, I'm coming, it takes me half a day to figure out what to write in a reply card. People tell me that today no one responds to an invitation. It's like a curse. You send out invitations, no one responds. A minute. I know why no one responds, because I know that when I try to respond, you know, oh no, I can write this. It's the right thing. It's a real traumatic experience. And he did this, and he said to me, we really don't know how we had the time to write all of these letters. We have all the letters. He was, during those years, he was so busy fundraising, teaching, writing, doing this and this and this. How in the world did he have time to write all these letters? It's and the answer they said by the Hespit is, there was a traumatic effect he had when he was a child, and that triggered. David, there's an insight here. This is an idea. I don't know if this is correct. This may be nonsense what I'm telling you, but these words of Rashi are really eye-opening, and now it requires us to make a mathematical calculation. How old was David when Mishkan Shiloh was Charaf? What grade was David in? Was he in fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade? It doesn't seem like he was past sixth grade when Mishkan Shiloh was Charaf, and he must have had a very good Rebbe that took him on a trip to Mishkan Shiloh, and he saw the real deal, and he saw a Churban, and that affected him. And at the end of his life, now we have a new insight why he wanted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, to do this. And you see this again and again, that the person who's Shalom Aleichem, and I told you this last week, is this was the...
Alan Gross posted it on the Kehul Boker WhatsApp.
The what?
The
Neshama Lechem. Thank you, Alan. And now you find online this, the Hespit where we said that about the third grade. They wrote it up a few times. But like I told you also a couple of days ago, this also really struck me. Menashe, from all the kings of Klal Yisrael, who's the worst? Who's the worst? So yeah, you can say whatever you want to say, but Menashe gets a lot of flack. Ein lo chelek l'olam haba. You know, there were a lot of Rishon out there. Why are you picking on Menashe?
And they tried to outdo one another.
Why are you picking on Menashe? And Yeravim ben Nevat is not as a tzaddikal. Okay? Achav. Amon was after Menashe, right? They go together. They go together. Menashe and Amon, he's the son for 2 years after. What's with Menashe? Ein lo chelek l'olam haba. What's... So I saw this a few days ago. I told this to you because, you know, Menashe was the king for a very long time, 55 years.
Yeah.
And his son another 2 years, 57. Interesting, the same number of years as Neuve Givain. The same number of years of Amon, of Neuve Givain, together, 57 at some point, is that, and I don't remember who said this, is the Chorban of Amon, of Menashe was, he was wicked long enough for three generations to pass. So even when Klal Yisrael, when he tried to wake them up after Yoshiyahu came along and tried to restore the damage of Menashe and Amon, who is he talking to, Yoshiyahu? He's talking to people, even if they're 60, when they have the age, they have no memories as a child of Shalom Aleichem. This fellow who broke down when he saw Shalom Aleichem, that's because he saw Shalom Aleichem. He saw it. What would be if this protest happened 10 years from now? So anyone that's already that age never would have seen a grandparent singing Shalom Aleichem, that it should make a dent in them. If the gap, after every wicked king, there was a little bit of a change, there's a little bit of respite. Oh, let's be choyze b'shuva. Let's be choyze b'shuva when a wicked king is gone. When you have such a long period of time where there is a blackout on Yiddishkeit, and then, okay, let's be choyze b'shuva. Let's have inspirational speakers tell you about Torah. Who are you talking to? You're talking to the wall. Because the people that you're talking to have no memories of what it was like. If people, when they were children, they saw the real deal, it wasn't for them, you know, it wasn't for them. They went to the Rachman al son, they did. But they remember their grandparents. The epis, you have what to draw from. But if you have such a long period of time pass where it's gone, it evaporated, there's no one to talk to. It's so much harder to take people who are biologically... The Einik Lach of Rashi. There are people here in this country. They've done DNA tests, and they can trace their yichus to the greatest Gedolei Yisrael. And now they're driving Harveys, tattoos, and Shugayim, all these crazy things. And you tell them, you know, you're an Einik of this great, great rabbi. And you show them, and they look at you and say, "Wow, so what? What do I care? Who you talk?" It's almost impossible. But you yichus. You have more yichus than everyone here put together. More yichus than everyone. You know where you come from? B'choyze b'shuva. B'choyze b'shuva. You'll be famous. They'll give you a shtela. They look at you like, wow. It's almost impossible. You know why? There's no one to talk to. Because they've never seen anything in their youth that they can draw from as to reignite, to relive the experience. If you caught these people, the previous generation, their parents, who saw their grandparents, who remember, then it's much, much easier to reignite them. But when a time passes, when you talk to people and you tell them about Yiddishkeit, and they've never heard about Yiddishkeit before, they've never seen Yiddishkeit before, it's a problem. what happens to a child in their youth is an incredible koyach. Look at David. If this idea is correct of when actually he died. All right, new chiddush today. Let's stop here, take a short break. I want to talk a little bit about Sfiras, or the minhag of Avelus of Sfiras HaOmer when we return. I'll show you the video. Yes, I'm going to go today. Yes, yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
57 years ceased three generations. The first generation was about 12 and a half years old, then there's 25 years for a generation, and another third, it's not three full generations.
Right, that can't be, right. Today
so we live 57 is a time period that could have
three
bar
generations.
Mitzvah, 25 and another bar mitzvah.
Let me show you the video. Uh-huh. Israeli flag.
Yeah.
Israeli flag. And here's the song, you
know. Avenue J yesterday.
Yeah, how'd it go?
Fine. Just like always.
Baruch Hashem.
A couple of people, I know there. Bert.
Jaffa.
And Norman Rosenblum. Yeah, people, they know him. Well, there were some new faces.
They're blue and white cookies?
Of course.
Oh,
tradition
okay.
is tradition.
Orlean.
I've heard others have it, too.
Orlean, he started
it's a
that.
Dr. Adler? I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
But he's carrying on the Orlean.
Oh, he
I've heard that other shows are doing it.
Okay, very nice. Yeshukai for telling me.
Of course, I go to the first minion, which has a lot fewer people.
The rabbi was there?
No.
He wasn't there?
More people that I know are like...
I don't think he davens there. I don't think he davens there. He has to go to work. He goes to... He has
to
be...
Work? He didn't work for the longest time.
What?
I thought he was a house husband for a long time.
With the rabbi?
No, Alan.
No, I'm talking about the rabbi.
I know more people who would daven at 8 o'clock, but I can't do that.
My first father, According to the standards,
Are we going today?
Yeah.
We'll go after?
Yes, sir.
use all those stories. He said,
My father-in-law is
called Rav. Any material to work in today?
He's a great rabbi. Bensonhurst.
Every
Shabbat, I was myself and my first wife, sister, and our two kids. We used to go to China and celebrate Shabbat by them.
Oh, and that's why you're taking
it. We had a dining room, the ancient Bible. Okay, so it was in the best of way. My son, I want something. What do you want?
Those
are tiny ones.
If you see white,
I
still remember
what I was talking about. Can I
get this? I don't know, years ago, a match is
one of my songs. Whenever I go now to Ramat Beit Shemesh, he has the entire setup of the dining room shelf. They sit there, he sings. And he brings his students at a meeting from Yeshiva. I said, he sings down Shabbat by him when I come there.
Yeah. 100%. Okay, but it's late. We have to go. We have to begin. Let's begin. Rabbi Sai, let's begin.